Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. You're joined by James and Super Trooper on this fine Sunday morning for an irregular episode. That doesn't mean we need Metamucil. It just means it's out of cycle and not the normal content. How are you doing today, Super Trooper?
Recovering.
Tell me more.
We had the Board Game Barbecue Sydney Autumn Games Day yesterday.
Yes, and was it all dexterity games? Was it a marathon? Was it... what are you recovering from?
What was it? 12 hours of games.
Well, the coffee queue made it about 11.2.
True, but that did suck some time away.
Yes, so yesterday we were at the Board Game Barbecue Games Day. It was their Autumn Games Day. They do this, about twice a year, usually?
Yeah, I think, three, but one of them is...
One of them is the three-day extravaganza. And thank you to the team at Board Game Barbecue. We appreciate you. We were there yesterday with, what do you reckon, another 90 people or so, give or take, for 12 hours of games. And it was fantastic. So today what we want to do is we're just going to do the post-game day wrap. We're going to talk about the games we played. Not quite in excruciating detail, but in as much detail as we can bear to spare this fine Sunday morning when we're both feeling slightly game hungover. Not hungover enough to not play another game this morning before recording, clearly. But we have problems. So, on with the show. All right, Super Trooper, what did we start with yesterday?
We started with what's become my start-of-the-day game at the two games days that I've been to now.
Didn't we start PlayCon with it as well?
No, we didn't. We played
one of those days?
Sunday night, I think it was.
Okay, all right.
But the big game which always draws a crowd, and that's Cthulhu Wars.
Yes, indeed. It is a big game. It barely fit on the table. I mean, the trestle tables that we had yesterday weren't the biggest. But it did barely fit, and the game itself barely fit on the map yesterday.
That's correct. We played with five players.
We did. And I actually looked it up. This was my eighth play of Cthulhu Wars. So we're not doing too badly for a game like Cthulhu Wars. If we've got eight plays in, was it about 2 years ago? It was 2 years ago you got that?
I can't remember.
Year and a half? You could probably look it up, but I remember the day it arrived. It arrived by, delivery, and it was a 5-foot-tall stack of boxes, and we were playing something else. And you went, huzzah! And we actually unboxed it. We played it that day. So I think we broke a record for crowdfunding delivery to table.
Correct.
For sure.
That was pretty quick.
So talk us through Cthulhu Wars.
So Cthulhu Wars is a big area control game, which is completely asymmetrical. There's all these giant Cthulhu-esque factions. They've all got completely different player powers.
In Dayglow plastic.
Yes, Dayglow plastic. And they're all chonky. Very, very chonky.
And I reckon you could drive over them. The minis are so robust. I don't know what they're made of, but one of the minis, something snapped off yesterday? We were talking about how robust they were?
One of the guys we're playing said.
His copy. Yeah. Or he played with something. They are so robust, I reckon you could literally drive over one and they would just bloop back up to, they might scratch a little bit. I don't know what they're made of.
Well, they're made of not the high quality plastic found in like ATO or Kingdom Death or something like that.
Yeah.
They made that step-down plastic, which makes them more robust.
They're a little wobbly, as in, when I say wobbly, they're a little flexible. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so the game, it plays up to 12. I think you can get a 12-player map, which would be wild. But it's everyone trying to control areas in the map, build some gates, which get you points, and then, doing it in completely different ways.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I love about Cthulhu Wars is you have no idea what's happening in the next 5 minutes, right? Like, you set the game up. I was playing the gate, what was his name? The
Opener of the Way.
Which,
because he's purple.
Which sounds like a laxative, but it's not. But he's purple because, I fancy purple player pieces. But also, I played him before and I remembered really enjoying his gameplay. And what was really interesting is, I think round two, I was running away with the whole game. I was, the game ends at 30 points. And I think I was on about 18 points after two rounds because I had some really killer early spell books. Didn't win. Didn't win because I just misjudged the end of one round, and Shazam, I was back to... I wasn't at the back of the pack, but this game can turn on a dime.
I think what made you lose and the guy who's playing Cthulhu win is a little bit of a Steve Bradbury-esque moment where I think we saw how far ahead you were.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of us ganged up on you.
That's right. Took all my gates.
And we... I think we almost went too far, and then the guy playing Cthulhu sort of... strolled in at the
back. Right. That's right. On his one skate.
Yeah.
I love Cthulhu Wars. I'll play Cthulhu Wars anytime it comes to the table. It's often coming out on your birthday.
Yeah, or some sort of an event.
An event day.
Where you make, you know, three other people.
Yeah, you need the right. It's kind of like surfing. You know, you put on the table and you're going to get on it and you're getting off it 2 hours later in a different position.
I think some people see all the dice that you roll for combat and they're like, turned away, dice for combat, no, I can't do it. But
yeah,
I think how many dice you roll, like, you know, you roll on big handfuls of dice, kind of mitigates some of the randomness. I mean, don't get me wrong, it can be very, very swingy.
But I mean, there was one game we played, I think it was rolling 22 dice in one go. I had to roll all the dice we had, and then more, I had to roll some of them a second time, right? Yeah. And it's crazy. Cthulhu Wars is crazy. I don't know what else to tell you, you know? Like, it's, I'll play it any time. Have we played all the factions you have at this point?
No, I've still got some. I haven't.
Have you really? After 8 plays, you've still got factions that are still in the box.
I think it's one of those games where you want to just keep playing some of the same factions with the same people so you get an idea of how they all work.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to literally... A bit like Root, if you were to literally just throw in a new faction for a new player every time, they're going to probably get turned off the game.
Well, I can tell you I've played a different faction every time I've played Root.
Some people are like that. Some people want to try the new one every time. Some people want to just get one faction and master it.
Yeah.
Because I think because of the asymmetry, you either try and grok it and look at what everyone's abilities are and try and
play. Yeah, I would have to play this game 50 times to do that.
Or you just look at yours, you go with your plan, and you go, okay, I'm going to move in here. And your opponent says, okay, or you're dead.
That's right. Are you sure?
I've got this power that says if you move where I am, you lose the game.
That's right.
You know, so...
Or you forget that Cthulhu could just munch one of your guys before the battle starts. I forgot that. And that's, to be honest, that's how I play Root, because I can barely keep track of my own board. Well, not barely keep track, but it's so asymmetrical. And if you're playing five and you haven't played all of those factions three times each, there's one of the guys at the table, you know, he was correcting people on the names of their minis. I'm like, dude, I don't even know the names of my minis. Like, what is going on?
I think one of my favorite things about it is you have the victory point track, the doom track, which are the victory points. And there, it's all public information, you know. You at the end of the game, end of the round, you control three gates, you get 3 points.
Yeah.
But then also throughout the game, you reach in and get this bag of victory point tokens.
Yes, which are hidden. They're hidden, yeah.
And they're from 1 to 3.
Yeah.
And obviously there's more ones and less threes. And at any point during the game, you can reveal those.
Shazam!
And add them to your points total.
Yeah.
And if you get over the 30 points, which is needed for victory, the game immediately ends.
Yeah.
And so that little tension of, well, oh yeah, I'm on 20 points, he's only on 18. Yeah, you know, I'm in the lead. But suddenly you forgot that.
I didn't notice he had 11 tokens in front of him. Yeah, yeah. Dragon Horde.
So I think that little twist as well just adds something to it.
Yeah, I had a look this morning. If you like the sounds of Cthulhu Wars, you better find a copy on the secondhand market or the secondary market real quick. It went through a bit of a tortured bringing to life, unfortunately, which we won't belabor here. But Peterson Games, it still has a website. They still have Cthulhu Wars listed on the website for sale, but zero copies.
Yeah, I think sort of the less we say about the designer, the better. He's a bit of a controversial person.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately, how do you separate the art from the artist kind of thing?
Yeah, there's that. But, it's like, do you buy Hitler's paintings?
Yeah, well, they're not very good anyway.
They're not very good, no.
But yeah, like...
It is a good game.
It's a very, very good game. It's a shame.
It's a good game.
The company and the designer of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Of odd.
All right, and after Cthulhu Wars, when we finally finished Cthulhu Wars,
it wasn't that long.
No, it went over a little longer, but that was less about the game and more about the coffee queue. We had a couple of fine fellows, and if you're listening, big shout out. We're not angry. We're disappointed. There's about a 35-minute delay to get it to the table because the one and only cafe where you can get a coffee, this joint, had about 47,000 people in line. But we went straight from Cthulhu Wars into SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So that's SETI SETI, or the full version would be Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
The PIN number.
The PIN number, that's right. So SETI was a new release of last year, only just, and we're in Australia. I know a lot of you got it at, was it an Essen release?
Sure.
I don't think maybe I can't. Yeah, it might have been Gen Con. Yeah, and it took a long time for us to get it in Australia. Actually, no, I didn't get it till this year. Got it early this year, I think. So finally, we got it in Australia. And SETI, I won't bear the lead. I love SETI. My understanding is you love SETI.
Maybe.
So talk us through SETI, and I'll jump in as I feel like I can't control myself at certain times.
SETI is a. How do you describe it? It's got a whole bunch of different mechanics. It's an action selection game, but your actions are either pre-programmed things that you can do on your board, like, you know, you can launch a probe, you can scan the solar system for signs of alien life, but you also have this hand of multi-use cards.
Really, Matt, like, when it's a multi-use, I think every card has 1, 2, 3, 4 uses. So you can burn it for a resource, you can discard it to bump your scan, you can turn it into income every round, or you can use it for the body of the card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The card will have an action which usually mirrors one of the main actions you can do, but in a better way.
Or you're paying for it a different way. Yes. You're like, scanning, for example, is, I think, 2 energy and 1 credit, and you might have a card that's 2 credits, and you still get to scan. So it allows you to do these things and pay for them in different ways, because resources are super tight in SETI.
But all of this is done in service of trying to, obviously, get victory points to win the game, but as you're going along, there's 2 unknown alien species on the board.
Which are randomly drawn at the start from 5.
Correct. So there's 5 in the base game. And I'm sure there'll be an expansion with another 10 more, and I really hope there is.
I hope so too.
And as you go along throughout the system doing these actions of scanning and landing probes and collecting data from various sources, you will you'll discover a sign of life, which will be either a blue, a pink, or a yellow.
Mm.
And each of these 2 alien species has a blue, a pink, and a yellow location on it. And once you've got all 3, you flip this alien species over, and mid-game turnaround, secret villain reveal.
Yep.
There's a new mechanic added to the game of some sort.
And it's a genuinely new mechanic. It's not more of the same.
It works around the framework of the game. So like one of them might add super powerful cards.
Yes.
Or something like that.
So you're still looking for those blue, pink, and yellow components. Correct. That we unlock to unlock the species. But they do something different in the game, which then usually either gets you high-powered cards from the species, or I won't spoil it because I know what all the 5 species do, but, you know, in the case of one of the species we had last night, or yesterday morning, it's all blending together, you get these super powerful cards for endgame points that add huge endgame points, but they also add a danger resource, and if you happen to have the most danger resource by playing this course, you lose 10% of your points. And all 5 of the species, while they have, you know, again, you're chasing those blue, yellow, pink, I guess, tokens to put out for the bennies. The bennies are the way the bennies come to light are totally different for all 5 species, which I think is super clever. It's really super clever. You know, and coming back to your question of how do you describe it, it's not even like some of these games we play, they're like mini game the game, but it's not, because all the pieces. It's not like we've got a, well, you scan and then you win the scan game, and you probe and go into space, you win the probe game, and they're all leading into these 3 resources that feed into the alien species. So you're madly trying to get points and generate income in the first sort of 40% of the game, and then the species flips and all the bonanzas are with the species.
Correct.
So you kind of have to go, well, now I need to pivot into this part of the game, or I'm going to be left behind.
And 2 of the games that I compare it to, and when I'm going to say these games, one, I know you'll agree with them because you mentioned it yesterday, and the second one, I think I might have mentioned to you, they are absolutely nothing like the game, but they have the same vibes, and that's Everdell and Castles of Burgundy.
Yeah.
So it's the Everdell vibe because the resources are so tight in the game.
So tight. Oh,
so
my
you
God.
Start the game, you're like, oh, I've got 5 money and I've got 4 cards that add up to 12 money. I'm never going to be able to play all these cards.
That's right.
What am I going to do? And before you know it, you're comboing into more resources.
Because cards can also be money.
Correct. And you can do a lot more than you think you can.
You made a card farm early in the game yesterday, which I think is probably what won the game for you. Because
they all have resources on them.
And, you know, cards get the top left corner, you can play them for little mini actions, but you can also drop two cards for a dollar or two cards for an energy. And you were getting three cards every income round. And cards are also, they're hard to get. Cards are hard to get, right? You start with four cards, and at the end of every round, you get one card. For free.
Yeah, unless you've done something.
There is no draw up to five. There's no, I guess you get two, because you get one from the end of round, and you get one from your income. So you get two cards for free, and the rest you've got to scrimp and save.
And a deck of what, 100 something?
Oh, it's more. I think it's 180 cards. Mm. You know, it's not quite an Arcanova stack of cards, but it is pretty close.
And the reason I compare it to Castles of Burgundy, even though there's no dice or anything like that, is when you play Castles of Burgundy, again, you roll the dice and you're like, well, I can't do anything with these dice.
Yeah.
But then you can.
You can.
And you have these little combos which give your brain little endorphin hits.
Yeah, that's right.
And make you feel happy.
Yeah.
And SETI does the exact same thing.
It does.
Where you combo this to do this, to do this, to do that, to do this.
Yeah.
Those little endorphin hits. Oh,
you can think you're painted into a corner, but you're not.
Correct.
You just have to look at the puzzle in your hand and the puzzle on your board and just think about, how can I turn this sideways and wedge it in to get what I need to do? And you may not be able to do exactly what you were looking for at the start of your turn, because the board state, particularly with that scanning bit, you know, there was a point about 85% into the game where you did something, and in my head, I was like, throw punch, throw punch, throw punch, throw punch. And I'm like, oh my god, I've been working up to that. It was one of my endgame goals for the alien species, and I had a goal, another goal, and it was all this linchpin stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, you motherfucker. And I thought, that's it, I'm out. Because as the main board turns, your opportunities to scan, it takes a long time to come back around. And somehow I was able to squeeze that last bit out by the end of the game, because there are a myriad of ways to get what you want out of the game.
And I know you've talked about SETI before on the podcast. And
yes.
This is my first time talking about it. But you can't go past the gimmick. And the gimmick is the rotating solar system.
Now, that's right.
Like, our hobby, we're playing with toys.
Yes.
We play with toys. For example, Cthulhu Wars has...
It's big
so
dolls.
Very, so very long back, games describe it. It has dolls in it.
Great big dolls. And great, they are not dolls. Minis. Like, the elder ones are like 17 centimeters tall.
Yeah.
They're
we
not...
We play with dolls.
We play with dolls.
Toys.
That's right.
In this hobby.
Yeah.
And the gimmick, you look at SETI and you go, oh, there's a gimmick. You have a rotating solar system. You have this big, pimply-looking sun.
Yep.
Bit of plastic in the middle. And you have... three boards on top.
You've got three concentric circles with little spokes that come off them.
Yeah.
So it's not even three circles rotating. It's three asymmetrical cogs. So
you have the planets and asteroids on them. And...
So think of like a cog with only like three teeth on it, for example, right? And they are all random. And you don't spin the whole thing. Sometimes you spin the middle one, sometimes you spin the two, and sometimes you spin the three.
The orbital mechanics kick in, and you thought you were in line to go to Mars, but no.
All of a sudden you've got three asteroid belts in your face.
Yeah, and you're stuck, but then the next turn someone does something and it spins again, and you can get all the way to Neptune.
Yep. And Neptune's where all the points are.
Yes.
For those that haven't played, Neptune's... If you can get to Neptune's moon, it's 26 points, right?
Yeah, the harder to get to from Earth, generally, the more points.
Yeah. Anything else you want to throw on the pile for SETI?
It's probably my favorite game of the year so far.
Oh, it's only March.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
when are we going to play SETI again?
We'll finish the recording and just throw it on the table. No, don't play it at 2. It's my only advice. Or if you do play it at 2, I've talked about house ruling before. I love SETI. I think it's easily one of my top 5 of the new games that have come in, for sure. You know, it's one that... as I said, I can't remember the date it came in. I think it was this year, or if it wasn't, it was very late last year.
You only got it this year.
Yeah, I'm sure it was late January, early February I got it. And I've already got, I think, 5 plays.
I think we played it almost like the week you got it.
We did, and I played it 4 times that week. Mm. Right, so I played 2 solo games, one with Lou, one with you, Project L on the Cracker, and then we played a 4-player. So I'm up 5 plays in basically 5 weeks for SETI, which is a pretty good run rate.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at similar plays for Galactic Cruise at this point, which I also love.
I just can't wait to see the expansion with all the new alien races.
Yeah, well, this isn't a Voidfall podcast. I mean, it is in general. I should be called Woman Clapping the Voidfall podcast, but Voidfall's got an expansion coming out this year, I think in May, as in there's a crowdfunding coming out. So I have sent David Turksey a personal message saying, look, mate, space pirates. I'm telling you now, space pirates with no affiliation. I want to be a space pirate just marauding around Voidfall doing what just, yeah.
Imagine if they did some IP expansions. They had like something, it's a Star Wars expansion or Battlestar Galactica or something. The Cylons are there. Or
Muppets in space.
Just Beaker.
That's right. So that's SETI. SETI, The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence by Thomas Hulick, published by Czech Games. There are 12 artists credited. I'm not going to list 12 artists. But what was interesting is Thomas Hulick actually released two games last year. And I think they're his first two games. And the other one's Galileo Galilei, which is also getting quite a good rap. Not quite as good as SETI, but people who are playing it are talking about it. Wildly different games for the look of them, but two in 1 year. Both hits, so congrats. So after SETI, we went a little lighter. We went into Critter Kitchen. So I think I talked about Critter Kitchen very briefly because we played it. But you want to lead us on Critter Kitchen?
Yeah, so Critter Kitchen, it's a worker placement game, but you're sending your workers to a row of locations which have some resources on them. But you're selecting them in a hidden way. So you have a hand of cards that have all the locations on them. You have a fast worker, a medium worker, and a slow worker. You choose a location for each one to go to secretly. Everyone does it simultaneously. You reveal, you send them out, and you hopefully have gotten some resources, but most likely you've been screwed.
Most likely it's not. It's a screw you sort of game. But what's really interesting is that the workers are weighted by speed, but also by capability. So the fast workers,
it's one little resource.
You get one ingredient, and the big, huge workers can get three. If there are three left, because they go last.
It becomes a mind game.
It is a mind game.
And everyone's resources are hidden behind a shield, so you don't know what they have, you know, unless you're counting cards and trying to remember stuff. But otherwise, you don't know what people have, and you've got to try and think where they might go.
And when you flip your cards, because it's you pre-program your cards face down as to where you want to send your workers, you flip your cards, everyone puts them out, and then there's generally groans around the table for about 18 seconds. And then
There's always one yay.
There's always one person goes, yeah!
As they sent their big worker to a location with no one else.
With nothing.
And they get all
or three of us have sent our big worker somewhere, and there's only three resources there, and we're all getting
one.
Or soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Critter Kitchen's fantastic. It's easy to teach. It's gorgeous on the table. I won't say you have the deluxe version. You have the uber deluxe version that has literally, I mean, the points are little enamel covered metal stars. You've got a little wooden standee for every sous chef, which how many sous chefs are there? About 45 it's got to be?
20 odd something?
God, it's more than 20.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe 30.
Yeah, and you might play 20 games before you see them all.
True.
Look, Critter Kitchen's absolutely fantastic. I think if we did an episode of top 10 most overproduced games.
Oh, it's definitely, for the amount of game in the box, it's definitely a way bigger box than it needs to be. But I think that's the draw for a game like this.
So that was what I was going to ask, is do you think if it was in a tiny epic dungeon style box, it would be as fun to play, or do you think the toys? I think it'd be fun.
I think this would be fun. I think the core mechanics are fun enough that it could stand on its own.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be this overproduced.
Yeah.
But no one's going to complain that it is.
I agree.
We had to, I think we might need to pat down Lauren from Board Game.
Yes.
She was just playing with the coins.
Loz was juggling the point counters every time she came by. Yes.
See if we were missing a few.
So, Critter Kitchen is by Alex Cutler and Peter C. Hayward and published by Cardboard Alchemy. Art by Sandra Tang, and you know Sandra Tang because she has done the art for Flamecraft, which is a very similar art style.
Yeah.
You can absolutely see that art when you put it on the table.
Yeah.
All right. So after that, we played Fromage.
It was Fromage next.
We played Fromage next. So Fromage is French for cheese. And talk us through Fromage.
Fromage, it's another worker placement game, but it's the board is a giant rondelle, not rondelle, it's a giant wheel of cheese.
It's kind of a rondelle. It's just you're not moving around it. It's moving around you.
True. So the way it's set up is it's divided into four quadrants, and every quadrant is facing a player in the game. And on your turn, you can place some workers under some certain rules into that quadrant. And each quadrant is either a resource gathering area at the tip of the cheese, or it is a mini game where you're trying to put cheese out to score in various different ways. After everyone's played, because it's all done simultaneously, you then rotate the cheese and the next quadrant's in front of you. Any worker that is now facing you comes back to you.
Yeah.
And then you go again. And there's 15... Yeah, everyone has 15 little bits of cheese, and that's the timer of the game. And when all 15 are out, the game's over.
And when all 15 are out for one person...
Yes.
Yes.
The game is over.
So if you're making cheese slower than everyone else...
Which I was yesterday.
Your scoring mechanics are not... Your scoring, you know, multipliers are not going to be great. So I've decided after yesterday, I love fromage. I liked it before. Not because I won. I forgot. We were driving home and I was reviewing and I'm like, did I win fromage? You're like, yes, of course you did. I think you're fucking moron. Of course you did. You had all the fruit. And I'm like, oh, that's right. I played a fruit game. The thing I love about fromage is you can get swept up into it and you drop your worker on the three resources.
Yeah.
And you're not paying attention. So up at the top of the wedge, you've got a 1, 2, or 3 slot where you can drop your worker in. And that worker will be gone for 1, 2, or 3 rounds. There are 4 rounds till the wheel comes back round to you. So if you drop your worker in a 3, and then you drop another worker in a 3, then you can get to a point where you're sitting there watching people take a turn because you have no workers.
That happened to me at least once.
Yeah, yesterday. It happened to a couple of guys at the table at least once yesterday. And I think the push-pull on that is fantastic. And the thing about fromage is on your board, at the top of the board, you've got constructions, which are very simple. You get a construction resource, which is a little... gray barn buildy thing, and you drop 2, 3, 4, or 5 of those to build a little building that gives you a little benefit. It's an ongoing benefit for the buildings. And then below that you've got cows, and if you farm cows you get extra cheese, so it allows you to actually make 2 cheeses in one turn.
Yeah, you can usually only make one. Even if you have all 3 workers, you can only make 1 cheese.
Correct. So it allows you to make an extra cheese each turn. And then the next one down is the fruit, so you get fruit, and fruit
Only cost in the game. Some cheese spaces need
a fruit. And as you make the fruit, they get turned into either fresh fruit that go with the cheese or like a fruit paste or jam that goes with the cheese. And it's really the only prerequisite in the game for, you know. And you can't play all 3 games. You can't play a barn game, a cow game, and a fruit game. And then the fourth, actually, you've got the recipe fulfillment.
Yeah.
Which you can kind of layer on, but if you want to chase recipe fulfillment, you've got to really chase recipe fulfillment, because that's a stacked sort of set collection. The more you get, it ramps up very, very quickly. And you've got to decide very early on in the game, where do I want to go with this and how deep do I want to go? And I think fromage is excellent. I think it's really excellent. Buttercup loves fromage.
He does indeed.
Yeah. And has Beelzebub played fromage?
No.
No? A little bit too much for now?
Maybe for now.
Yeah? All right. So for...
I was just going to say, what I'm really looking forward to is playing with the draft buildings.
Yes.
There's a stack of, I don't know, 20 buildings or something like that, which... So everyone's got a pre-printed board which has asymmetrical buildings on them. They're all, like, they're different, but they're all similar. Like, one will give you points for fruit, one for cards, one for dairy, one for construction, things like that.
And each board has one with the worker placement spot on it that gives you a resource of some sort.
Whereas these buildings all have completely different abilities on them, and there's a draft done.
Yeah.
And I think that'll take it up even another notch.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to that. I think, but every time we've kind of played with a new group of people, and I want to introduce the base game to them before throwing in the draft. But I think, I'm really looking forward to playing with the draft.
And I think it's the kind of game that once you've played it once or twice, it gets its teeth into you because it's so tactical. You know, you can't even really be strategic. You just have to pivot every turn. You pivot. You're like, okay, oh crap, that guy I've put out, I need him again. And so I found myself constantly pivoting in the game. And I think that is great. And I also think it'd be great for Dusty. Has Dusty played fromage?
Okay.
It'd be great for him because while you can pre-plan, it's only 3 turns, you know, whereas Dusty likes to pre-plan 99 turns in advance. You can only really pre-plan 3 turns in advance. And
I think the only plan you do is to go, I need to make sure I have a worker next turn.
Or I need to have a worker of this color, because the workers are associated with the type of cheese. You've got an orange worker, a blue worker, and a white worker. And if you're looking at what's coming around the corner, you go, well, I need my white worker in 2 turns because I need to make a white cheese to put it on that shelf, because that shelf gives me the benefits I need.
As long as someone else doesn't.
Yeah. Gazump you on the way? Yeah. 100%.
Looking forward to Formaggio.
Yes, Formaggio's the...
Standalone
sequel, Italian cheeses.
Yeah, with 4 new quadrants that can all be...
And can they be... have they announced, can you take those 4 quadrants and mix them with these 4 quadrants? Yeah,
indeed.
So you get 4 totally different scores. I like that.
Well, it's not 4 different. Like, you get 4 new ones, but the...
It gives you 16... Yeah. 4 times 4, you get 16 different combinations of gameplay, but they are totally intermixable.
4 new mini-games.
Yeah, nice. Nice. Yeah, love it. Now... I'm going to throw something to you. So this is by Matthew O'Malley and Ben Rossett.
Mm-hmm.
have a guess at the other games they're responsible for. They've made two other big games that you have played.
I've got absolutely no idea. I know the company has made Andromeda's Edge.
No. Yes, you're correct. They didn't make Andromeda's Edge Luke Laurie.
Yeah.
So, no, these two fellows made Search for Planet X.
Okay, yes.
It's like these three games are so wildly different. So they've made the Search for Planet X and Paint the Roses.
Okay.
So these two guys have made three wildly different games. I haven't played either Search for Planet X or Paint the Roses.
I think they're good games, but I don't like them.
No?
No. I'm not a huge...
Voldemort likes both of those, doesn't he?
Yeah,
because he's in that headspace of... Nanu, he loves that stuff. Yeah. Yeah, so they've made those two games, which I know they're both deduction games, but they're also quite different.
Correct.
And now Fromage and Formaggio. Art by Pavel Joba and published by Infamy Games.
Cheese.
I love cheese. So after that, we played a game that I really like. And it was only our second game of this. We've played it once here in the bunker. And we played a four-player yesterday at the Board Game Barbecue Day. And that is Skyrise.
Yes.
So, talk us through Skyrise.
Skyrise is like Ra, but with buildings.
Yes, Ra in the clouds.
Ra in the clouds. I'll let you talk through it as you know a bit more.
Okay, so Skyrise is an auction bidding game, and you've got a four-quadrant board, and, you know, I have the playable version, which has all the plastic and all the buildings, and the chonky key to the city, which is about 200 grams or whatever it is. The way Skyrise starts is you're going to get your buildings. You've got six buildings for first round, five buildings, and your wonder for the second round. And on the back side of the buildings are numbers. And those numbers are completely asymmetrical around the table. So Super Trooper and I will never have the same numbers. No one at the table has the same numbers in each round. And those numbers are the value of your bid. And on the table, you've got a center island, which has four quadrants, and you've got four big islands around them, which, at a guess, I would say there's about 16 quadrants in each of those, give or take.
Well, there's enough spaces for every single piece.
Yes, so that would be 48 spaces around the board. So you take four off that, that means there's 44. So there's 11. There's 11 in each island. And at the start of the game, you seed each of the neighborhoods on the island. There are 11 neighborhoods on each floating island. You seed them with a little token. And that token is either one of four different colors, which happens to match the neighborhood colors, or it's one of four different tokens which matches the patrons. And the patrons are basically a blind or a hidden scoring mechanic. Or it's one of a wild token, which can go into anything. Or it's one of, I think, what do we just have? There are only two plus ones in the game.
Something like that, yeah.
And so what you do is at the start of the game, you're going to start at the middle island. And if I'm going first, I'm going to put a building in. Say that building has a number two on the bottom. And it's going to go around the table. And the next person is going to have to put a building next to where I've placed of a higher number. And you can only draw from the six that you've got for the first round. And that number could be four. It could be 44. And you go round and round the table, each time putting a building down in a neighborhood next to the previous one. So it can't be next to anything that's been placed. It has to be next to just the previous one that's been placed. Until somebody goes, pass. And then everyone around the table goes, pass. And then the last one placed, they flip the building over. They collect the little token off of there, which, as I said, it's a color that matches the four neighborhoods. And they place it on their player board in a set collection for that color token. And then you start again. And you keep going round and round and round.
But this time, the bid can be from any building that's already...
Any pre-existing building.
Or still in the middle.
Or the middle island. Correct. And you proceed around the table bidding away. I think what I like about Skyrise is... Two things. One of the things it was a really interesting balancing mechanic that I discovered yesterday, which we'll come to. But it's that... I've got a building that's got a 97 on it. So I know no one else has 97. I can play that anywhere I want. I can even play that for my first building and go, well, I've got that. What you've got to plan for is this sort of triangular scoring in that at the end of the game, your buildings are going to score for the color neighborhood they're on times the number of those tokens you've collected.
Correct.
So you can't just willy-nilly go, do-do-do-do-do-do, hey, this is great, I got lots of tokens, I got lots of buildings, because you're going to go, oh, fuck waffle, I've got lots of brown buildings, but no brown tokens, and you're going to lose the game. So you have this almost poker face of, well, I'm going to bid here, I'm putting my building out here, and it's going to go around, in the hopes that maybe by the time it comes back round to you, it maybe is in the part of the neighborhood you're in, and you go, ah, there's my 99 building, and I want that. I love that. The And so once one person has gotten rid of all their buildings, the first era ends. Mm-hmm. There's some area majority type scoring. There's one scoring mechanic that's the same for all rounds, which is who's got the tallest building, broken by ties of the next tallest building. And then you've got, I think it's five or six different ones you choose to at the start of the game. And that could be building next to blimps, buildings next to lakes.
Yeah, there's a few little pre-printed things.
There's a few little pre-printed things. And so you do that. And then basically there's an initiative system where you've got a wonder, which is the trump. You've got a wonder building in round two. You've got five buildings in your wonder building. And you can drop that and you immediately win an auction. You can't start with it, but you can immediately win an auction. So if there's something in round two that you are absolutely gagging for, you can grab that with trump building. The trump building, the wonder, also has cards associated with it. So at the start of round two, the cards all have an initiative at the top. So you're going to pick the card that you want to play at the start of round two, deciding, well, how badly do I want to go first? Or how much do I think I can score off this card? Because each of the wonders has a unique scoring capability. Wonder cards, not the wonders. It's not associated with your little statue. It's associated with the cards. And so you've got this push-pull at the start of round two of, well, if I play this, it's got initiative of 8. I'm going to go first, but doesn't score great. Or do I want to go last? Because this wonder, I think I can score and I can get big points off it. And you start again. Anything you want to talk about round one?
I didn't place as many buildings as
And I'm coming else. To that, because this is something that I didn't see in our first game, but I thought was really clever. So, Super Trooper didn't place all his buildings. There were a few spare buildings around, but Super Trooper had a building, I think it was your number 54? 53, which is right in the middle. And one of the things we discovered is that going into round two, your buildings are all either really tiny numbers, and I'm talking like 6, or really big numbers, over 100, and there's nothing in that mid-tier, right? And so, how many times did you play?
I got to play it 3 or 4 times without winning, I think.
You did play it without winning, but the thing about it is,
everyone was having to sacrifice.
We were all forced to play really high numbers to beat you with a bloody 53. So I think it's a strategy that I didn't see coming, and I thought that is a really magical little bit of game design in that you went into round two and you didn't win those auctions, but you forced us to burn our big ones.
Correct, which set me up for what I wanted.
Which set you up for what you really, really wanted at the end of the game, and I thought that was really, really clever. I think Skyrise is simple to teach. I think it does have raw vibes. It's got all the toys. It was the version I have from the version we played last night. It's got all the toys. You know, the floating islands are these gigantic 3D plastic clouds with boards inserted in them. The buildings are all... I want to say every building is unique. There's 3 different sizes of buildings, but the sculpts are all unique.
Yep.
I won't go into the minutiae of the scoring at the end. There's some other stuff, you know, with the patrons. If you get a disc from a patron, so you might be a disc B... There's patrons A, B, C, or D. They have a blind or a hidden number on the back. And you will score based on how many of that disc you've got multiplied by what they've got on the back. And they've got 3, 4, 5, and 8. And good old Mo next to us gave the game away pretty early on. No poker face at all. He picked up the D and went, ooh! And then was immediately chasing D's, and I think for the rest of the game...
Anytime someone got a D,
he went, ah! And so, yeah, we knew the D had the 8 underneath it. Skyrise is a delight to play. Anything you want to throw on Skyrise?
The only thing is, I really enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to playing it again. I still prefer Ra.
Sure.
I think it and Ra service... It, probably Ra and Nineveh Lead almost seem like the same weight in auction games.
Yeah.
And I think out of those three, I think they're all really good. I still prefer... Ra.
Yeah.
And then you've got things like For Sale and High Society, those small card game auction games, which I think, yeah, they're auction games like those other ones I mentioned, but they almost serve a different purpose.
Yes.
They're like, we can do an auction game in 10 minutes.
That's right.
You know, throw a few cards.
Little bit less tactical. Yeah. You've got a very small decision space that's meaningful, but it's a very small decision space.
I think the way the buildings come out in Skyrise, which then give you different starting points, and the fact that you're trying to get area control of certain like coloured neighbourhoods, I think makes the game go just that little bit longer.
Yeah.
Whereas Ra, almost like everything's in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, you go, well, do I want this pot?
Yeah.
Yes, no. Or do I think I can get it cheaply because there's a bad one in it, so someone else might not really want to bid for it? I think that makes Ra go quicker. So I think Skyrise might go for like 10 minutes more than I'm happy with.
Yeah.
Maybe in a few more plays, you know. Yeah. It might come down a bit, but I really, really enjoyed it. Looking forward to it.
See, I really like Ra, but I love that brain-burning decision bit and the screw you. And Ra's got a lot of screw you in it, oh, right? Yes. You know, because you can absolutely... Yeah, we were playing one time, and I can't remember who it was, but they were declaring auctions on anything that came out to just burn everyone else's stuff at the table, because I think he had a 2 left. He's like, bid, and look, Ra's a delight.
I just like in Ra how not bidding can be a screw you.
Absolutely, absolutely it can. Absolutely
someone
can.
Starts an auction and yeah. No one else bids, and they're stuck with it.
Yeah, yeah. That was Skyrise. Skyrise is by Gavin Brown, Sebastian Ponchon, Adam Wise, and art by, have a guess. This surprised me because I never would have picked it, but now that I've played it, it's just there next to Arcs.
Oh, yes.
Now that I've played it, I can kind of see it.
Well, absolutely no idea.
Andrew Bosley.
Oh, okay.
Andrew Bosley. There are other artists involved, but he's the primary artist. He's an Everdell. Yeah. He's done Flock Together. He's done, he's got normally a very distinctive art style, that sort of really heavy color palette that's in that sort of autumn colors and
anthropomorphic
animals, but that sort of watercolory sort of look, I can kind of see it now. Andrew Bosley, I mean, there are other artists involved. Damien Mamoliti was one of the artists credited. Have a guess at, you know, just have a random guess and think of a game that has art that is so not Skyrise. I'll give you a hint. It's number one on Board Game Geek.
Brass. Yeah, well, it's Roxy Games. It's the same.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Cardboard Alchemy is the same publisher, but it's different artists. But like, it's Andrew Bosley, and the artist from Brass did the art for Skyrise.
Like that industrial.
That's industrial diesel punk kind of stuff. Great game, load of fun. So after Skyrise, we played
Aquatica,
which you brought with you.
Yes.
Yeah, so talk us through Aquatica.
Aquatica, it was a recent purchase. I'd heard nothing but good things about it. I thought, you know, why not? So I grabbed Aquatica. And it's a hand management game. Feels a bit like Century Spice Road, where you're playing cards from your hand, then you get all your cards back into your hand, but you've got to play a card to do that. But you're doing it to chase some locations on the board, which you can either get by conquering them, so you have a card that might give you some military strength, you can take a location that way, or you can buy a location with some gold. And once you take these locations, you put them into a lovely, like, triple-layered board.
Yeah.
They slide in.
It's a very nice board.
Yeah. And they go up to, on the left-hand side of the cards, are little benefits in little circles going down the side of the card. And you slide the card in, under, like, sort of tucked under the board, up until the first little benefit. And then as you go through the game, you can put these little cards further and further into the board, getting the benefits of them.
Yeah.
And once they're completely done, all the benefits have been acquired, they have points on them. And you've got to play a card, which allows you to tuck it into your treasure chest.
Yeah.
And score it as endgame points. And, yeah, it's just the card cycling mechanic is quite neat, and the grabbing the locations and getting the benefits and being able to manipulate these locations that you've received to get the benefits to get other locations.
Yeah, and you unbox it, you're setting it up, and I'm like, oh, Super Trooper, you haven't sleeved these location cards. And then we got the boards, and I'm like, ah, it's the Lacrimosa issue. Yes. I know why they're not sleeved. Because these cards literally slide into the player board.
Like two layers of cardboard with a little gap in between.
Yeah, so just like Lacrimosa, when you're programming your actions or swapping your actions out, they don't fit if they're sleeved. And I'm assuming they don't fit sleeved into the player boards.
No.
And they're a funny size as well. They're an odd size. They're like a narrow. They're a narrow, thin size. I really liked Aquatica. It was a way faster.
It's a race game.
It was like a.
It's a race game. That's
a 9-minute teach, and I think we were done in 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And I would love to play it. How does it play 5?
It plays 4, and I think the expansion takes it up to 5.
I'd love to play it at 4. You know, I think it looks great. I think it's interesting, and I think that. That dual mechanic of card of obtain cards. Well, there's 3 really, but the location cards, which are the ones that farm you
points and more
points and bennies, you can either conquer them or you can buy them. But there's another card market along the bottom, which is where you buy cards that go into your hand. These are characters, And so they're very Dominion-esque, where you're buying them, they go into your hand, because currency, you don't have a pile of coins or a pile of strength for
it. It's Bitcoin.
It's, you generate the currency in turn, and you've got to spend the currency in turn. So if you generate coins in turn, you've got to spend that in that turn, or if you generate strength for a conqueror, it's going to be spent in that turn. And you don't have a lot of that up front. You don't have a lot of that going on, because most of your cards only generate one or maybe two coins, yeah. Or one or maybe two. And some of the locations, you need eight to conquer them. And that's where the bennies on these cards that you've slid into your tableau, every time you bump one up, you can get a benefit on it. And you can bump more than one. So if you've got multiple cards that give you a combat boost, you can bump both of those. You get plus two on one, plus two on another. You also have this little pile of plastic manta rays.
Yes, they're great little...
Which are gorgeous, but as much as I love purple, purple was the wrong color for those manta rays.
We can barely see them.
You can barely see them.
It's not a player color, so you can't actually play as purple.
Objection, Your Honor. So the manta rays are these gorgeous little tactile plastic manta rays, and on the back side of them, not their butt, on the reverse side, there's a benefit, or there's an immediate benefit you can take. So to take that benefit, you flip the manta ray over,
And it rests
resting on his back. And then you have a card you can play, some multiple cards that will flip them back over. But you can't see the benefit. I mean, you can, but you've got to get... It's in a color purple that you can barely see on the manta, which is like a gray-bluey kind of color.
Yeah.
Whereas your player pieces...
They're nice and bright.
Because you start with four. You start with four in your color, and these are also the tokens you use to time the game. Once you achieve certain thresholds in the game, one is having eight cards in hand, one is having
five locations on your board.
If you've got three in your treasure chest, or if you've got two of the special purple mantas,
yep,
you achieve one of the endgame scoring. And as soon as somebody achieves those four endgame scoring, you play one more turn each and the game's over.
Yeah, it's so quick.
It is very, very fast. And I say it is a race game. It is a race.
And I didn't realize that the first time I played with Dusty.
Yep.
You just played two player, and he won in, I don't know, just a handful of turns.
It was a tapio run.
I was just getting going. I was like, wait a second, the game's over?
Yeah.
And the same thing happened to me last night.
Yeah, look, and it's, to be honest, I wasn't, I actually achieved the goals by accident. I wasn't paying attention to them. I would just look down and go, oh, I've now got eight cards in my hand. And so it was one of those things that I think I won by accident. You know,
the game comes with different scoring objectives that can go over the...
So there's overlays. Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
And so those are the ones on the board, obviously the four basic ones.
Yep.
It's called the advanced mode, and you can just draft a whole bunch of different objectives. And I think the ones... I haven't really looked at the ones that are on these discs, but the ones on the board are almost like the easiest ones to achieve.
Yeah.
They're the ones you achieve just by playing...
playing the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really have to go out of your way.
I'd love to see what the other objectives are, because as I said, I was just... I had five locations in my board, and you went, oh... You got five locations. Like, oh, so I do. I'd put a manta ray out, and then it's like, well, oh, I've got nine cards. Man, oh, Shazam! I've got that one done, and I was a delight. I wasn't expecting to be so quick. It gave me similar vibes to, what did we talk about last night? It's the other water one,
Abyss.
Okay, so Abyss has a very similar sort of look and feel in that you've got this really clever two-tiered auction, basically, on the board. So and it's not this similar art style, it's aquatic themed, and there's Abyss is a much longer game. Abyss is a much longer sort of euro. It's about an hour 15, hour 20, and I'd love to get my hands on a copy of Abyss. I've had a look, and it's quite hard to find, but I think you'd love Abyss. And it gave me similar vibes, not just from the fact that it's aquatic and whatever the case is, because the production quality on Abyss is nowhere near... Aquatica's got a very lovely production quality,
yes,
you know, with the boards and
the artwork's great.
And the artwork's great, that sort of stuff. But similar vibes in that, you know, you've got the multiple... I think there are three sort of rows of cards in Abyss, and you actually can auction them at different... You can purchase them at different levels depending on where they've been migrated to on the board, with very different outcomes in Abyss, as in you're chasing very different things. But, you know, I really enjoyed Aquatica. I'd really love to play at a higher player count with the more challenging goals. Because, as I said, I achieved them by mistake. I was just playing the game and wasn't really paying attention to rushing the goals necessarily. I was trying to sort of enjoy what was happening and work my way through it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Looking forward to it.
Aquatica, that's by Ian Tozowski. And I couldn't find any other games by Ian Tozowski. I think from the looks of it, he's done Aquatica, the four expansions, Aquatica, the promo card. So good on him. And this was had another army of artists there was an army of artists on this, and it's published by Cosmodrome Games. So that was our second last game last night. It was 10:17, and I remember that because I was at the Board Game Barbecue Library going through games, and Dana Banana looked up. Thank you, Dana, for your help last night. She said, "Oh, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm looking for a game that we can play in 48 minutes." 48? Oh, it was 12 past. Must have been 12 past. Yeah. I remember saying 48 minutes. And she said, 48 minutes? And I picked up Forest Shuffle. And I said, "This says 60 minutes. She goes, "It's not a 60-minute game." And then she said, do you want me to come do a teach? I went, "Yep, heck yeah. If you got the time, come do a teach." So we put Forest Shuffle on the table. And do you want to talk about Forest Shuffle?
So Forest Shuffle, game of just a deck of cards.
Yeah.
A big deck of cards.
And that, honestly, when I learned the timer for the game, I'm like, there's no way we're going to finish this.
And then, yeah, and halfway through the game, I'm like, this is going really quick.
Yeah.
That deck was going through a lot.
So Dana did a great teach. Again, thank you, Dana. It was a perfect teach. We looked up one or two things that were going, but we were able to get straight into it. So talk us through the gameplay.
So
let me first say, I really enjoyed Forest Shuffle.
Me too.
I thought it was really clever. I thought it was a little bit different to a lot of the other things we played. And I think it's the kind of thing that, I don't think it's an hour game, but maybe, I actually don't think it would be much longer at four people.
No, I think it's the same size deck.
It's the same size deck, yeah. So
regardless of player count, it's going to go the
same. Yeah.
So in Forest Shuffle, you start with a hand of cards. And there are trees and there are animals. Animals are birds and deer and
bugs. Bears
and bugs and things like that. And on your turn, you play a card with a very Race for the Galaxy type mechanic where the cost of playing a card is other cards.
Yep.
So you might need to play a birch tree, and the birch tree costs two cards to play. So two other cards from your hand, and they go into a row of cards.
Yeah.
And then you put your tree down. Boom, that's your turn.
And if you do a tree, one comes off the deck as well. Every time you plant a tree, one comes off the deck.
So one comes off the deck, and the two from your hand go into this little row. And if there's ever 10 cards there, they get discarded. And then the row starts again. And then some of the cards you play might have a little bonus on it. So, you know, you play a birch tree, it allows you to draw a card. So you just draw a card. Then you have animals. And the animal cards are either divided on the card left and right, or top and bottom.
Yeah, they're divided vertically or horizontally. Correct. So they've got two animals on each card.
Yep. And then when you play them, they go to either the side of the tree or above or below the tree, depending on where the artwork and the way the cards split up. And again, they have a cost. And if you, some of the cards will say, if you play for this cost, say might be two cards, and both of those cards match a certain suit,
yep,
then you get an extra benefit. It could be take another turn.
Yeah.
Do something else.
Or tuck another animal for free.
Yeah, or something like
yeah.
that.
So all the animals have suits. All the trees have suits.
Yeah.
And so if you pay cards in the same suit as the tree of the animal, you often, not always, but often there's another little combo-tastic Benny attached to it.
So then a tree can have four cards attached to it.
Yes.
You have a card to the left, card to the right, card above, card below.
Okay, so on my tableau, I didn't get to it because I found it very late in the game, but there are rabbits. And rabbits can go boing, 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 boing,
yeah,
boing, boing, boing.
Keep going out one side.
Out one side. So you could have 27 rabbits on one tree if you like. They're all huddled in the bowl of the tree together, making more rabbits.
Yeah. And so you get to go through playing these cards, playing a tree, putting animals and bugs around it, which are all going to score in so many different ways. There's so many different ways of scoring. Then there's three endgame cards put into the bottom third of
yes.
the deck, I think it was. One's on the top, like the very top card, and the other two are shuffled into it. A little bit like Pandemic, you know, you don't know exactly when the
yep.
end game's going to trigger. And then, yeah, once that's done, the game instantly ends. A bit like High Society, you know,
yep.
you flip that third card, boom,
yep.
the game is over. And then you add up your points. You go through every single card in your tableau
yep.
and, yeah, get the points.
Yeah, I think the cards looked great. I think the trees looked great. The animals looked great. I think the art was fun. I think the iconography was really clear.
Oh, yes.
Once we learned the 15 or 18 symbols, it was very clear. You knew immediately what the cards were going to do. The gameplay was super fast, because on your turn, you're either playing a card into your table or drawing two off the deck.
Correct.
Right, and that's it. That's the game. And then you have a cave, because if you play a bear, you get to pull everything out of the meadow, whatever it was called.
Yeah, wherever
All the discards.
The costs, because that
yes.
can also be discarded out of the game.
Correct. Sorry, yes. All the costs that you've put into the meadow,
yeah,
which flushes every time you get 10.
Yeah.
You can tuck those into your cave, kind of like the dirt in Earth.
Yes.
Right? It's the same sort of, and they count for minor points at the end of the game. I really enjoyed Forest Shuffle. I thought it was fast. I thought it was... I think at four, it would be almost frenetic to try and catch scores.
Yep. I mean, think you have. I think, as you mentioned last night, the game will go probably at the same pace, but you'll have a lower score.
Yeah, because the points are finite. The cards are the points, you know. And you cleaned my clock yesterday, which, you know, I don't mind. But at the same time, it's, I think, because the deck is the deck, the points on that in that deck are going to be divided by four,
correct,
rather than divided by two.
Yeah.
And I think that that race to get the right cards on the table, I actually think, much like Aquatica, I think Forest Shuffle would feel like a race.
Yes.
Because it's, oh God, I've got to build points before the third winter card comes out. Because it's each of the timer cards are winter, and if three come out, the game is, as you say, it's immediately over. It's not take one more turn, you are done.
You've almost got to, it's also more tactical than strategic as well. You go, okay, I've got a card that says get points at every other bird.
Yes.
But like, you don't want to spend the time just farming for birds.
No, you don't want to mill for birds.
You want to make do with whatever you have. And if a bird comes up, huzzah,
that's right.
Play the bird.
That's right. And it felt very Race for the Galaxy for me.
Yes.
You know, not just with the card spend, but with a lot of cards hinged on having other cards for scoring.
Correct.
You know, I had a fox, and the fox wasn't going to score unless I had a roe deer in another tree. I had a bat, and the bat was going to score one, but if I had at least three bats in other trees.
Different bats as well, wasn't it?
Just three.
Oh, the butterflies had to
be butterflies had to be different. Yeah. You know, it had to be different butterflies. And I was sliding butterflies, and then I realized I think I had three of the same. I'm like, oh shit, that was bad planning. Little Box, easy to teach. I'd happily play Four Shuffle again. I would be shocked if it's not in one of our collections by the end of the year.
Well, see, you say that. I don't think it's going to be... I don't know whether I would buy it. Because as much as I enjoyed it, one, the scoring took almost as long as the game.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a downside. And it feels like a step up from Castle Combo.
Yes.
And I think I'm going to get more out of Castle Combo.
You like the cleanliness of Castle Combo.
Yeah, it's still got the same end-game scoring, you know? Like, check this card. But there's only nine cards.
There's only nine cards, not check. 27.
So it feels like Forest Shuffle in half the time.
Yeah.
But playing Forest Shuffle really made me want to play Earth again.
Do you know what? Forest Shuffle came out, and we were building the tableau, and I thought the same thing. I'm like, God, this feels like Earth. I'd love to... Because Earth has all of that combo-tastic scoring. You've got your 4x4 tableau that you're building. And I thought exactly the same thing when I was playing. I thought, oh, I'd love to play Earth again.
So for me, there's a spectrum from Castle Combo to Earth.
Yeah.
And Forest Shuffle's in the middle. And I'm like, I'm playing Castle Combo. You know, you play that in like 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, four player, boom, boom, boom. Take a card, game's done.
Yeah. Yep.
Scoring again takes a little bit longer. And then you go, well, I want a meteor game. I'll play Earth.
Yeah.
And then you've got Forest Shuffle in the middle. As much as I liked it, I don't know.
Torn. We'll see. There's nine months left in the month.
Yeah.
Or in the year. There's 9 months left in the year. If Amazon's got it for $17, you guarantee it's going to be on one of our shelves.
I really enjoyed it, but it did make me go, I'm going to play Earth again.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think you and I have only played Earth once.
Maybe twice.
I think I've played it about five times, and the fox really likes Earth. She likes Earth because it's simultaneous play. It's not uber competitive. You are competing, but you're almost competing with yourself through the game because you're trying to maximize. Because once you put a card down, you can't move it. Whereas Forest Shuffle is a lot more forgiving with that because you can just drop a tree anywhere and build around it. You know, it's not this tree has to be adjacent to this tree. You might have to have multiple on the table.
Correct.
Which I think alleviates the calico burn.
Mm.
But I think you're right. It kind of makes it one step down from Earth. Because in Earth, you've been like, well, you have to plant mushrooms in all four corners. And you're like, once you play a mushroom card, you're fucked. You've got to make sure you play mushrooms in all four corners. It's a good point. We should play Earth.
I think you're saying you sometimes play with Earth. Forest Shuffle almost felt simultaneous.
Because it's so fast.
It was that quick.
It's so fast. Draw two cards, play a card. Draw two cards, play a card.
I almost forgot, like, whose turn it was a few times.
Yeah, because it was back and forth. And we finished it in like 22 minutes. It was 10:45 when we finished.
We left early.
We had time for another game. Yeah. We could dispose one more in. And that was the sum of the games from yesterday. So your thoughts after the game day yesterday?
Yeah,
I didn't go last November. Just, correct. You know, last November, the Funks and I were away for a weekend. It poured rain the whole weekend.
I didn't get as many games in as last year, but that was because I was with Project Gale and the Kraken almost all day.
Yeah.
And we just played game after game after game.
Were you playing heavier games last year, though?
A bit of a mix.
Yeah.
A bit of a mix.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I would have preferred one more heavy game yesterday. Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, you should have gone over to the table next door. We were playing Galactic Cruise.
Yeah, we were already playing. We were playing something else. I did bring Galactic Cruise. Never got out of the box. I had a great time. I'm very much looking forward to PlayCon. PlayCon is 3 days straight, and then it's like a day of recovery afterwards because you feel like your brain's been put through a meat grinder and then piped back into your ear with a piping bag. I think it was a great day yesterday. I got about 5 hours sleep last night because I'm an early riser like you. We both start our days early, so I was up at about 5:30 this morning, but we started our day with one more game before we recorded, and that was one of my favorites from last year. And a big thanks and a shout out to Dean from Advent Games. Dean from Advent Games makes an appearance at all of Board Game Barbecue's events here in Sydney. Mm-hmm. He comes down with a swathe of games, and he's always got a really great selection of games. You know, on the table last night, I wasn't buying a game, but...
Oh, no, I had to have my wallet on lockdown. I walked past those tables with all those games on.
But one of the things you can do when Dean's coming is you can pre-order stuff, and he'll bring it. So you save... Dean's great. He only does $10 flat shipping. But when you're buying something like the expansion to Compile, which has only just been released in Australia because I've been looking every 2 weeks since I got Compile, it's an $8.95 expansion. Paying $10 shipping for that... hurts just a little. So big thanks, Dean, for sorting me out with that. I did, of course, you know, buy another game that was on my list and I didn't need. It's never about need. Which I'm very much looking forward to playing. I will probably take that one away with us. We're going on holiday shortly. But I did get the expansion to Compile. Incoming! Not incoming, it's here. Which we played this morning.
Yep.
So we threw that on the table. This is the little bonus content. We'll talk about Compile because we played that an hour and 2 minutes ago, according to the timer on the record. So, talk us through Compile for one more go of games.
Compile is the better-looking version of Air, Land, and Sea.
Oh, it's a better-playing version of Air, Land, and Sea.
Yeah, you might have me on that. Yeah, we'll have to play Air, Land, and Sea again, too.
You and I played, I think, was it 3 games of Air, Land, and Sea back-to-back the first time we played, and I loved it. I loved it. It's Marvel Snap, right?
Yeah.
But with a little less going on with some of the stuff. Air, Land, and Sea is fantastic. To be honest, I will probably if you put them both on the table, I would choose Compile 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, I might as well.
Yeah, so Compile's a 3-line battler, and there are now 15 protocols because there were 3 more released. There were 12 in the original box, and the expansion had 3 more. And a protocol is 6 cards that are loosely themed around a name like
metal, plague, fire,
love, death, spirit, gravity. And so the 3 new protocols that we got today were love, hate, and apathy. Now, apathy didn't hit the table, but we both drafted love. You were in a good mood. I drafted hate, not for any reason other than I probably need another coffee. And I actually went the full heavy metal. I had metal, hate, and death for my three decks. And probably not the most balanced 3 decks because there was a lot of discarding going on.
Do we ever pick things on balance?
No.
No. Say, oh, that looks cool.
I picked them on how pretty the cover art is for the protocol.
And how funny
the combination sounds. That's right. So Compile, we've got 3 rows. We're going head to head. And you've got to play cards into your 3 rows. And there's a whole lot of... You can't play a metal card into any row but metal. Well, there's a way to do it, but you can play it face down into another row. And play it face up, you get the benefit of the card. You play it face down, it's a straight 2 points. And as soon as you get 10 on your next turn, if Super Trooper hasn't wiped
10 and the most.
10 and the most. As soon as you get 10 or the, and the most in a joint row, both sides, you get to compile those on your next turn, which means you just pull them all to the discard, you flip the card at the top, and you've got to compile all 3 rows to win.
Yeah.
I just think Compile's a delight. You know, it's a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's one of those that I might try the Fox on that. I think it might be a little bit too stabby for her liking.
Quite take daddy, but not in the. I know it's designed to be take daddy because it's like I play this card, you delete a card.
Yeah, it's not mean though because you're not choosing someone.
Yes.
So I'm playing that, it affects you. I'm not gonna destroy my own card. Yeah, I really like Compile. I think the cards are so sexy.
They're all foiled metallic because they're all computer themed. They've all got little circuit boards running around the outside.
Yeah.
The cards that are the ones that sort of head your column, the cards that are your, what would you call them, your header cards, whatever they are, the top of the column, they're PVC. They're chip theory quality PVC, so you don't need to sleeve those. The new expansion just fits in the original box, which is a teeny tiny box, and you can literally take that game anywhere. And closing remarks on Compile?
The only thing I do really like in Airland and Sea is the retreat mechanic.
Yes.
So in Compile, obviously the first to compile those three rows wins, whereas in Airland and Sea it's points.
Yeah.
And for winning an Airland or a Sea in each round, you get a certain number of points.
Yes.
Depending on how many cards are left in your opponent's hand, I think it is, or your hand. And so...
And it's first to 15 or something wins the game.
12, I think. It's really, really quick. And I think you can get 6 from winning completely.
Yes.
So if you win completely, you can win the game in 2 rounds.
Yeah.
If you win both. But that, you can go, oh, I didn't get a good hand of cards, or I'm not winning. That's it, I give up. Rather than you getting 6 points, you can take 1 point.
That's right. If you retreat, the other side gets 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that mechanic is neat.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen it in any other game where you can like choose to run away. Your opponent still wins, but they only win a tiny.
It's a very minor victory versus what could be quite dramatic. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that does add something, but yeah, the amount of variety in Compile is just
phenomenal. And with 15, because you draft your protocols at the start of the game, whereas Airland and Sea, you've got 18 cards and it's the same 18, and we have the same 18 cards back and forth. Which is, it's a fair starting ground. Airland and Sea is great. Don't get me wrong. It is a great game. Compile, you've got 15 protocols and you draft them at the start of the game. So you're drafting. And so then you've got wild interactions with yours. You are taking cards off my deck with your love deck. It's like, I love you. I'm going to take a card off your deck. So all of a sudden you had hate cards in your deck or death cards in your deck. It's really clever. Really, really clever.
But see, just to talk about that on love. I have them in my deck, but I can't play them face up.
Oh, your cards. Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. You can't play them
face down.
So
and then maybe flip
that, because that's a really interesting mechanic that I don't think... So, spoiler alert, the Apathy deck is all flips.
Okay,
it's all flips. Flip yours, flip mine, flip yours, flip mine, flip two, flip three, discard one, flip. So the Apathy deck is like, I'm just going to flip a card. I can't be fucked doing anything else. Yeah. So you can play a card into the wrong protocol face down
and then flip
it up for the benefit that's on
it. And that's how I had to play some of the cards that I stole from you. Play them face down. So you can play face down cards into any room.
So Love and Apathy, take my cards, play my cards, flip them.
Yeah.
Could be a really powerful... Anyway, we don't plan that far ahead.
No. Again, drop them. Just give me three.
Give me three that are all red.
Yeah.
Give me three that are pretty colors.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to throw on today?
No, that's it.
Yeah. All right. PlayCon's in July, so that'll be the next big... We'll do a big PlayCon wrap-up. It'll probably be a four-part mini-series or something.
One for each day.
Well, that'll be it. That concludes this week's therapy session. There'll be a short break because the Fox, the Peanut, and I... We are disappearing off for a midterm holiday because that's what you can do when you're adults and your child is only 9 years old. We are off on a family holiday for a couple of weeks. I'm not game enough, I think, to take the microphone to Fiji and record an episode. But I will be taking some of the smaller box games away. The Fox said, what games are you bringing to Fiji? And I went, well, my girl. All right, let's, I don't know. Aeon Trespass, which
Agamonia.
We got room. So we'll be back in April. I do have some great guests lined up. I've got two sets of guests lined up. May get both of them on in April. So they're both in the queue, which is fantastic. Thank you as always for your time. I hope you feel lighter because I feel lighter. And people say you can't buy happiness, Super Trooper. But with this hobby, I call fucking bullshit. Till next time, get your game on. Even if you're going to play with yourself. Because playing with yourself is 100% normal. Everybody does it. Peace out, mofos. In the bar.